Blog Talk Radio.
This is all about mine.
Is all. But we're not. Okay, what's...
From coast to coast and around the world.
You have questions, call or email. Well, don't call because that's not going to work.
Yeah.
We on?
Okay. There he is. And
you sound like you're in a big empty room, and because you're like echoing and stuff.
Echoing.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see if there's anything.
Like you're away.
Yeah,
from. Standing back away from the microphone or something. That's the sound I'm getting.
I'll have to listen to it and see what no monitors are. There's way too many settings here. I don't know if you caught that, but I think it was after the show, over the weekend, I completely reinstalled Windows 11. And
oh.
Luckily it saved all my files, all, 607,000, whatever it is on there. But it was there, and some of the apps weren't still there, but I still had to reinstall a couple of them. And I just found out 15 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago, that I hadn't installed everything because I was trying to get on here.
Oh, no.
Can't find all you're looking for. Well, look for it then.
Okay.
And, So I still have to, I'm still looking for whatever setting I need to, if it's echoing too bad, then I'll just have to mute myself, which I do anyway.
Right.
How can I mute myself? There is one thing, though, as we're getting started here, thank you all for tuning in at 7:03 p.m. And I was going through Facebook right before the show started after the other issue and had to, waiting for the software to install. And I came across an article about Disneyland, and it said, a water professional says Disneyland is the scariest place on earth as far as hydration. And looking at the article, it says this guy is an acclaimed writer, TV persona, water tasting educator, and the world's foremost water sommelier. People were joking about it because they don't associate that word with water, and so I started looking into it, and it's an actual thing. There is a professional water people out there. It is, and he actually obtained the O-1 visa reserved for those with extraordinary talents to grow to be a citizen of the United States of America, based mostly on his expertise at distinguishing high-quality ingesting water. What?
I never heard of such a thing.
I was like, okay, is this just an article they did for publicity? But no, he's on National Geographic. He is, in 2014, he was America's only water sommelier. it sounds like a big deal. And I put on one of the comments, must be a joke or something. And I put on there, I said, I produce a wine show and I know what a wine sommelier is and, what it takes to get up there. I didn't know water was a thing,
Right.
But this guy's up there, Martin Rees, some big deal in the water industry, I guess. I never heard of this.
I've never heard of him or a water sommelier. Yeah, that's odd, to say the least.
Yeah, and because of the, you know, he was talking about the hydration choices at the Disneyland Resort and, you know, all this, you know, Coca-Cola, Sprite, and all that kind of stuff. And then he starts talking about Dasani water, bottled water, and all that other stuff. And it's just the whole article goes into it from a specialty. I didn't know that was, you know, I don't know, maybe still pulling one on us, but I just thought that was kind of a fun
thing. That is really strange. I've never heard of such a thing. I mean, you know, water?
I mean, swish it around and go, oh, this is clear.
This has a little taste of toilet.
Dude, this is not edible. Not looking for consumption. But, it's just, I don't know.
I'm going to have to look that up myself, look up water sommelier and see if see if there's anything on it or if I can find out anything. What is his name again?
Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N, Reese, R-I-E-S-E. And apparently there's a film called The Water Sommelier, National Geographic. He's a very one of a very small pool who have made a profession out of tasting and judging water.
What?
There's water judgment? Oh, my gosh.
Sure.
Maybe we should have a sub-show called All About Water.
Yeah.
You know, not to belittle the guy, but that just seems really odd.
No.
You know?
I thought when I saw the headline, I go, no, that's not a thing. There's no way. And I was going to join in on the, you know, the comments are like questioning, are you kidding me? That's a, you know,
yeah,
that's not
really.
And then I go to Google and there's, I mean, he's interviewed on CBS News. He's on National Geographic with something. water menus I'm seeing. I mean, there's, I don't know.
That's going to be. I'll go look that up myself. That just seems, you know, wow. I don't know. You know, I mean,
I thought myself until I saw it, and I go, okay, these are not jokingly. You know, National Geographic is not a fly by night. You know,
no, it isn't. It's
media,
not something that.
I don't know. David Fried is another one. Portfolio, we've got a portfolio. Reese is the most well-known, and then there's David Freed, or Fried, F-R-E-I-D. Tasting, analyzing, judging. Oh, my gosh.
Judging? Judging water. I wonder who submits samples for them to judge. I wonder if it's, you know, your local water department or... That opens up a whole field of questions in itself.
They're talking about spring water, mineral water, is sparkling water. I mean, I guess so. I don't know.
That's funny. Not funny, just funny, odd.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought. I was like, no, it can't be it. They misspelled, you know, water taster or something, you know.
Really?
It's a thing. It's a profession.
A water sommelier. Oh, my gosh. Well, that's interesting. I'm glad you found something that like that. That is...
Everyone's going to come across something and to bring it
that
up.
That is really interesting.
I didn't want to take over that, but I thought that was in a way related to wine, but then again, it's like, no, there's... Something
doesn't
sound right. But, it's a real deal.
I never heard of such a thing. Well, you know, if they get water sommeliers, maybe we'll start seeing sommeliers in other areas, too, like
coffee.
You know.
Could Kaplowitz be a cigar sommelier?
Yes. Cigars, the whole group of guys in there. I mean, you know, they can just, you know, become judges and become, you know, cigar sommeliers. Yeah.
Yep.
So, wow. That's funny. That is funny. Are we hooked up to anybody, anything? Are we live or?
Oh yeah, no, we're on Facebook and YouTube.
Okay, yeah. So they both, and we got, and mm-hmm. You know, it was an issue last week. You said you got that taken care of then, yeah.
Yeah, well, I got it taken care of last week before I had to reinstall had to reinstall Windows, but it was just a ridiculous thing. I thought, yeah. You know what, I'm doing too many things going on 10 minutes ago. Let me see if I can hear the
Let everybody out there know we have another issue with my sound this week. Although I was able to 2 weeks ago, was it 2 weeks? Yeah, I guess 2 weeks ago, we didn't do a program because I had problems getting on to Blog Talk Radio and Mike couldn't hear me. So if he can't hear me, then no one can. I tried all sorts of steps I can think of to get rebooted, get on and everything, and nothing worked. And so we ended up doing, Mike ended up doing a 15-minute show and then shutting it down because I wasn't there, and obviously he wasn't prepared.
Yeah.
You know? So
I didn't have the material. I was like fishing for ideas.
So we didn't do the show 2 weeks ago. But last week we got on and we had a problem at the beginning too, and we both had to shut down and reboot and get back on, and we were able to get on and everything worked okay.
Yeah.
Again, when I tried to get on today, it was the exact same thing as 2 weeks ago, except when I called in on the guest line tonight, I was able to get through, whereas last week, or 2 weeks ago, they wouldn't even let me through the guest line. And so Mike had to go in as the host because without that, we can't do anything. And, you know, it's just the whole stuff in there. But I don't know what's going on. I mean, I have problems like this, you know, every other week. We have a guest coming up in a couple of weeks that we're going to have to, you know, have everything hooked up for it and ready for it. So, that's why Mike is, to me anyway, he sounds a little distant. He's on the host line, and he's doing that. So, you know, bear with us. We even after 13 years, we still got bugs. We got to iron out here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
pre-recording. Recording these is looking better and better every time.
I know. That's very true. And we don't have to worry about this, you know, issues. We can always do it. Do a pre-recording and then put it in the time slot. But tonight, actually, my engineer just brought me in a wine. That was nice. This is Urban Barn. U-R-B-A-N, Urban Barn, Cabernet Sauvignon. It's a California 2020, and it says on the back, let me turn my light on. I had a storm go through here, too, right before I started to hook up. I don't know if that was part of the issue or not, but, So, Urban Barn, 2020 Cabernet Sauvignon, California. It says, on the cusp between city and country lies the urban barn, rustic yet chic. These barns were once used for cattle and horses. Now they are built and contain barrel rooms and fermentation equipment. This is the new barn, the winery, the urban barn. Vented and bottled by Urban Barn Winery, Manteca, M-A-N-T-E-C-A, Manteca, California. Cabernet Sauvignon, 13% alcohol, and then the required government warning on it. That's all it says, you know, Urban Barn. I have not had this yet. We find deals and we get them, and we got a stack of wines here that we taste all the time, different wines. But this is the Urban Barn. Let me see. Very nice Cabernet aroma to it. I don't know how long she had it open out there. I'm in the den, locked myself in here to do the show. And oh, very nice Cabernet aroma. It's got, I'm getting a hint of pepperiness in the aroma. It's got some plum. And I can smell the alcohol too. It seems the alcohol is quite strong in the aroma. Let me take a sip. Little light, but good mouth filling. The legs are a little light, but they're there. Second sip always. Oh, nice. It's, you can taste the oak. Obviously, there's some oak aging on this one. The oak is there. The fruitiness doesn't come out real well. The plum I was tasting, or I was getting the aroma, was not passed on to the taste. It was a little hot, which is a term used, for those of you who don't know, wine being hot is a term used to describe alcohol taste or alcohol content that starts to take over the taste. A little hot on the initial taste, but then that dissipates pretty nicely. The aftertaste is, so far, it's been the most enjoyable thing of everything. It's still there. It's starting to come out the classic Cabernet flavors in the aftertaste. And it's really nice on the aftertaste. But I'm a little disappointed in the front end of it. Let me pour myself more. She was a little stingy on her initial pour. But let me see. Okay, well, that aroma is coming out better on this. Plum, some dark fruit, hint of currant. This isn't bad at all in the aroma. I think it just needs to open up for a while. So what I will do is I will talk to you and let it sit here and let it open a little bit and see. I will revisit it in a few minutes here and we'll see what we got. And if the aroma opens up even more and if the taste opens up and all that. So we will see on that. So, okay, when I rebooted, I lost a lot of my tabs. I had a bunch of tabs open that I was going to talk to you tonight about, and when I rebooted, obviously all the tabs closed, so I'm going to have to flick through them here and find them again for us. And okay, not that tab. Let's go back to here and see what we got. Oh, come on. Okay, there we go. Castle Ridge Winery. Here's one of that I was going to talk to you about. Castle Ridge Winery is located in Iowa, southeast Iowa, in a town of Leighton, I think, Leighton. I'm going to have to call up my relatives in Albia, which is about half hour away from here, and ask them how they pronounce the town's name. I think it's Leighton. But Castle Ridge Winery is located at 1681 220th Street in Leighton, Iowa. They're southeast of Des Moines, a little southeast of Pella, Iowa. In fact, Pella has a great tulip festival every year. They are open 7 days a week, year-round, and they have let's see, a new pork recipe out that's made with red, white, and blue wine for the upcoming holiday. You can check that out on their website. Go to TasselRidgeWinery.com. And they have their weekly wood-fired oven pizza every Thursday and Friday, 7th and 8th. Ooh. Oh, July 7th and 8th. I was going to say, why that? Thursday and Friday, July 7th and 8th from 5 to 8:30. Pizzas served until 8 o'clock. And so you can get all sorts of different pizzas, wood-fired pizza. They also are doing tastings, but reservations only. You have to call ahead and do it. And they have flights. They have a couple of different flights. I think two flights, depending on the flight. Five tasting flights. Wow. Five tasting flights. And they serve warm bread and cheese and dipping oil with it. And also, salted cashew nuts are also included in it. So those range from $15 to $25, and they've got gift certificates and all sorts of stuff. I've told you about Tassel Ridge before. I'm telling you about it again. By all means, if you're ever in that area of the country, southern Iowa, check it out. It's really a nice winery, great people, and the wines tend to be sweet. They use a lot of the Midwest muscadine type grapes, but not all of them are. There's a whole different styles and all that. The red, white, and blue wine is really not sweet at all. It's really quite good. I've had that before. So check out Tassel Ridge Winery, located, like I say, in southeast Iowa. And let me see. I know I have other stuff here that I need to talk to you about. It makes me mad that this is not working properly. I have to blame it on Blog Talk Radio, too. It's the only thing I can think of that's causing these problems. And so, okay, well, it's not in that section. Let me jump over here in this section and see if it's... what I want is in here. Okay, here's another one. Ennery River Winery. Again, I've talked about them quite a few times. They said they got all sorts of things going on in Ennery River Winery. June 19th, which is this weekend, their last Sunday live music before they take a break through the summer because of the heat. It starts at 2 o'clock, ends at 5:30. They said pack your lawn chair, head out to the winery. We'll have wine by the glass, by the bottle, or as a slushy available for purchase. The group, Faisu McLean and Brandon Turner with Roll In Cuban. I have no idea what music they play or anything else, but it's a free music series that they do. Also, karaoke they do karaoke coming up, so I'll keep you informed on that. Hometown America, Thursday, June the 23rd, 6:30 to 8:30. Let's see, more info about that. What is Hometown America? I don't know. Paint party. Paint and sip party at the winery. Beverages are available for purchase. Wine tasting is not available. You can buy wines by the glass. You can purchase a souvenir cup to go with you. Obviously, pets are not allowed. Smoking and vaping is not allowed. But it's $42, which includes all painting supplies and a free glass of wine, and light snacks will be available, as well as door prizes will be available. So if you're there, you want to join the Hometown America Paint Party, you can do that. And Let's see what else they got coming up here. There's tastings and all that. They are located at 1650 Dusty Road in Newberry, South Carolina. Their phone number, 803-276-2855. So, again, if you're in that part of the country, that's a good stop there, too. And, you know, if you do stop at any of these wineries that I'm telling you about, tell them that All About Wine. You heard about them on All About Wine. They would enjoy that and show them. I think they've all been guests on the show, and show them that being a guest on the show is a good thing there. Okay, let me see here what else I've got. Wine Spectator is having their Wine Spectator's Grand Tour in Florida. 200 wines rated 90 points and above. It's going to be Saturday, June the 18th, 2 days. It's going to be at Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood, Florida. That's just north of Fort Lauderdale, right? Hollywood's north of Fort Lauderdale, not south. Okay, so Hollywood, Florida, at the Hard Rock Casino and Hotel. Over 200 wineries. You can get tickets online. They have wines from all over the place, all over the world, and they are all highly rated wines. Oh my gosh, download the wine list. There's, you know, 200 wines here you can actually get, and I mean literally from all over the world. So that is this Saturday. Right, 16th, 17th, 18th, no, that's Sunday, 19th is Sunday, Father's Day. Oh, well, that's a good present for Dad, taking him to this thing. Oh, my gosh, can you imagine his surprise? You will definitely be the favorite child if you do something like this for him. This is three cities, three spectacular wine tastings, but the one in Florida is taking place this Sunday. Let me see how much the tickets are. Just tell me. Florida. General admission, $275. VIP admission, $375. So the VIP gives you more time, more tastings, and some extra stuff. It's for an extra $100. VIP, everything outlined, plus an extra hour. And tasting of 200 wines, souvenir Riedel wine glass, and a selection of food. So I fill up on the food and all that, but it gives you the extra hour. And believe me, when you go to wine tastings, you start walking around, and you're saying, oh my gosh, the time is up. And you wish you had that extra hour. So this weekend, this Sunday at Seminole Hard Rock. And Las Vegas has already been done. That was June the 4th. Washington, D.C. was June the 10th. And here we are down in Florida for the June 18th Wine Spectators Grand Tour. Okay. And let me go back to this. Well, I had an article that I was going to talk about, and as soon as I can find it, we will. But, okay, here we go. I found it. Yay! Let me do another aroma test on this wine since it's been open for about 20 minutes now. Oh yeah, the aroma is opening up a little bit. I'm getting a little bit more berry flavor, blueberry, blackberry. The plum is still there. I think the plum is overpowering, but it's also opening up those other berries in there. And it doesn't give you the smell of the alcohol. I told you the smell of alcohol. It's dissipated since it's been open for a little bit here. So, taste. that's open up too. That's nice. The alcohol doesn't overpower the taste like that first sip did, so leaving it open for a little bit to help that. I'm still not transferring that aroma of the plum and the blackberry blueberry into the taste that much, though. That's sad. I really wish it would. The aftertaste, again, is really delightful. I like the aftertaste on this wine. That's one of the finish, if you will. Either way, you can go with the word. Very, very pleasant that way. So, all right. That is Urban Barn. Cabernet Sauvignon, Urban Barn, California, Cabernet Sauvignon, 2020 vintage. So this is reasonably young. I mean, 2020 vintage is reasonably young for wine. So there we go. Okay. Everyone is aware. You should be if you're not, but everyone is aware of the Russian invasion of the Ukraine. And I jokingly said at the beginning before they invaded, I said, well, Putin wants to go in and invade Ukraine because he wants to get the wine, because Putin's a wine drinker and he enjoys his glass of wine and or bottle. And I said that Ukraine is a big winemakers, and that's why he's invading. Well, I've got an article here about the Ukraine winemaking, and it says that the war is really starting to threaten this. They've been making progress for years, and the war is starting to cause some problems. So, the Ukraine's wine culture has blossomed in recent years, but now because of neglect and, well, destruction. It is starting to fall apart again. Ukraine's wine, though, let me tell you a little bit about some of their wines and some of their prices. Here's a Cotner Hills Cabernet Sauvignon 2014, 84 points, and it is $6. You know, you're going, wow, $6. You know, they're all pretty cheap. Are you getting my engineers in here? And I'm going to ask her, are you getting any plumminess, blackberry out of the aroma or taste? Yeah, that was my first major. The plum was coming out, but
I don't do blackberry.
I'm getting some nice aftertaste, but I'm a little disappointed. She came in, and the cat ran in here too. And the sad thing is about the cat in here, she likes to walk on the keyboard, and there would go everything. Okay, there's that. All right, so here we go. The wine aromas of pomegranate and black plum, flavors of cranberry and black raspberry, finishes short-lived yet pleasantly acidic. That's what they're saying about this, not the one I'm drinking, but the Cabernet Sauvignon from the Ukraine. The Appalachian Ukraine, 12% alcohol, it says, and from Cotner Hills Winery. And they have quite a few listed here, quite a few wineries here, or wines listed, 19 of them. But 84 points, 82, here's one that's 86 points, which is a Muscat. 85, 83, 82, 86, there's another 86, there's an 88, a Reserve Riesling. Let's see what that says on the review. That's $9, and it says this has aromas of white flowers, honeysuckle, and flavors of lemon custard, guava, and lemon rind. The finish is rounded yet crisp. So, these are Ukrainian wines. This is what they've been doing. Let's go back to what they had to say about the about what's going on there. Ukrainian wines have been around for a long time. They good viticultural history and some nice international connections. There and submit that and click that. These pop-ups, you, everybody deals with them. But there's a winemaker that's in the Ukraine that was born and raised in the Ukraine, and Odessa, actually, which is the third largest city in Ukraine, and he has worked for years in the Finger Lakes region, and so he's familiar with cold weather. In the Ukraine, the immigrant vintners from Switzerland did their first planting just south of Odessa in around 1822. So this is the country's oldest winemaking company, the Odessa Vinprom. Odessa Vinprom. And it was founded by a winemaker from France in 1857. So a little back history there. During the Soviet era, though, they said that they lost all of their vines, and they were not just left there to die and are unattended and just let go. They were actually cut out of the ground. Why? I don't know. I don't understand the reasoning behind that, but that's what they did. The vines were cut out of the ground. And so, and the end of the 90s, when they started to put everything back together again and make wine again, they had to start from scratch. A full thing, because no vines, no anything. The winery that they're at now is the, what's it called? His own winery. Well, it doesn't say. Just let me see. What's it called? Gotta click on it and see. Are you over 18? Yes, I am. Now, if I weren't over 18, I would still click yes if I want to get into it. That's sort of a silly thing to do. Ace is. The guy who owns the winery and runs the winery is Stakhovsky. Stakhovsky, S-T-A-K-H-O-V-S-K-Y. Stakhovsky, a tennis player. And Stakhovsky is actually beat Roger Federer in at Wimbledon, knocked him out in one of the early rounds at Wimbledon. So he has himself a background in that, and now he owns the winery. They have 20 hectares of rent. He rented 20 hectares, and Sergi is what they call him, first name. But Stakhovsky Wines was first harvest was in 2018, and he makes an Ace by Stakhovsky, Merlot, Saberavi, and a Terminer. I don't know the Saberavi. I'm not familiar with that. But those are his wines. And he started that, and he says he is on Ukraine's western region of Zakarpattia, which is also known as Transcarpathia. Neighbors to Slovakia, Hungary, and Romania. And he says the region is excellent, great growing conditions for all that area, the foothills of Carpathian Mountains. And on the other side, the Pannonian Plain, which the plateau in which Hungary lies. So a little lesson in geography along with this here. Look at that. But Ukraine's other leading wine regions along the Black Sea coast in the country south, those are the ones that I'm familiar with, those ones that I've seen, they have had problems. The winery, the Beykush, B-E-Y-K-U-S-H, and let me see what Beykush, what the winery site says. Beykush Wine and Art, family-owned winery. Their vineyards are surrounded by water. They got, let's see, 11, 12 different wines. They have a Beykush Wine Club. All sorts of neat stuff there. So, Beykush Winery is located down in the lower part of Ukraine by the Black Sea. And they say that they can see missiles landing in the vineyards and destroying parts of the vineyards. But they said everyone still is working and trying to make the wine. Well, that would be somewhat distracting, if you ask me. If you have missiles landing in the vineyard, why? What if they just happen to hit the building? I mean, so they tend to try to keep things on track, and they said a lot of the employees have left to go defend the country, and they said they are trying to protect the region around them and from firefights and looting and stuff. So it's been a concern there. Another winery, a major producer in the Kherson region, Kherson, K-H-E-R-S-O-N. Obviously, I'm not Ukrainian, so I'm probably destroying these names for you. Kherson region has been occupied by Russian forces since the second day of the war. That is the Trubetskoy Winery. And let me see what it says about this. It says a lot about this, but it's written in Ukrainian. So I really can't tell you. But they got a map to show you where it is. And well, there's some stuff in English. Birth of Wine, Terror, Vineyards, Winemaking. Nice little article there. So you can check out these websites. These are really some nice websites. Let's look up Ukrainian wines and go to some of the websites and check out the wineries. Even if the wineries themselves made it through intact of the war, many local roads did not, and which stopped shipping completely. And the logistics and the timing of the arrivals of the employees are impossible. Here, be to work at 8 this morning, and you know you have a road that's been bombed and all sorts of stuff around it and everything. And you know, I can imagine how difficult it would be to try to run something there. But they're saying that they, because of all the stuff, the wineries are still operating as many as they can, as much as they can. But don't expect a 2022 vintage, especially the south part, the area along the Baltic Sea there. They don't expect much of a vintage. And they said they would be surprised if a whole lot of the wineries survived down there. Winemaking and wineries started to make a comeback in recent years in Ukraine. They've been embracing Georgia's Saporavi grape, which is, let me click on something here and see what it says about it. Here's the Teliani Valley 2020 Winery, Saporavi grape. It says aromas of black cherry, caramel, and toast pave the way for flavors of black plum, raspberry, butterscotch, bitter orange, violet, and anise. Grippy tannins lightly recede into a flowering finish. $16.90 points it was awarded. But Saparavi grapes, I suppose I can go to my grape list and tell you what it is, but I'm not going to. 89 points on that, but the Saparavi grape is a Georgian grape from their neighbors in Georgia. They used to hold festivals and wine festivals and all sorts of stuff there. It was growing in popularity and really starting to take off until the invasion by Russia. They're saying that the... My light just burned out. They said that the grapes that they're making, the wines that they're making now, are really doing quite well, but they are in desperate need of supplies, things like casks and fermenters, bottles, other equipment, and they're asking their European counterparts, European neighbors, if they would be willing to donate these things to the wineries in Ukraine so they can keep going. Bottom line here, it says the thing that we don't know the magnitude. We're trying to see the scale of what's going on and how big of an effort it's going to have. We're too early and the war is too fresh. And most importantly, the war isn't over yet. So, Ukrainian wines, right there in the birthplace of the civilization next to Georgia and stuff like that. So, again, look it up. Look up Ukrainian wines and look at some of their wineries. It's very, very interesting. What did I do? I didn't want that. Okay, here we go. So, okay, lace wings. I don't know if you're sure what lace wings. Lace wings look... something like a dragonfly. Four wings and little small things. They look something like a dragonfly. Well, lace wings are being used in a lot of wineries now around the world to try to control pests. They're also referred to as aphid lions, A-P-H-I-D. Excuse me. Aphid lions. Because of the predatory nature in the vineyard. And they became a major ally for growers around the world. It's a eco-friendly method, and it's good for organic, certified organic, biodynamic, and a lot of these other types of certifications you can get. Because they are, you know, pests. They are natural predators. And they are being let loose in the growing, in the spring. And one method is to have little cards, like index cards with eggs on them, which are grown in lacewing farms, I guess. But they put them out in the vineyards and let them hatch out. Now, these lacewings will eat mealybugs, aphids, thrips, leafhoppers, spider mites, and that's just some of the things that that they'll take care of. It says that despite their short lifespan of just 2 to 3 weeks, in that period of time, they will consume up to 250 leafhoppers, leafhopper nymphs, or 11,200 spider mites. So they are really quite prolific eaters when it comes to that. They set out the cards, and they said that setting out the cards is quite labor-intensive, but it is well worth the time and effort. They're looking at now doing a less labor-intensive release. There is a my head just, you know, stopped right there. Using drones, that's the word I was looking for. they're using drones to put the lace wings out there instead of having to go out and put the cards all over. Drones are being employed. And they said it's much faster, much easier, less labor-intensive, and cheaper. So the lacy winged, let's see, where am I? Okay. The lace wings, or aphid lions, as they're sometimes called, is now the new vineyard pest remover. They find that it's working extremely well. Okay. And there's something else. We've talked about climate change a lot. I mean, we're always talking about climate change, and everybody we get on as a guest tends to bring it up every once in a while, and with good reason. It's affecting the vineyards. I was playing golf today, and I mentioned something to the two guys I play golf with all the time. I said, I'm not sure what all I'm going to talk about tonight. And one guy says, how about climate change? I said, I've talked about that an awful lot. I said, you can't help but talk about it when it comes to grapes and vineyards and stuff like that. He said that he had just heard that they are, not heard, but he saw a program that was talking about the climate change in the Champagne region of France, how it's starting to affect the grapes there and how it's starting to affect the outcome of the grapes. I asked him what show, and he kind of remember, because, you know, anymore you can look up anything on YouTube, but he said that it's just starting to affect the grapes. The show was really talking about how the heat is affecting some of the big wine growing regions of the world, and he said because of the heat in France and the Champagne region particularly, he said they're saying that California probably could pick up the gauntlet, if you will, of Champagne and do it. And I told him, I said, you sure? And he goes, yeah. He said, they were saying that California could be the next one. Well, I don't know. I mean, California's going to have to step up on their Champagne wineries because there's not a whole lot of them. I think there's a couple, three of them, and that's all I can think of right now. But there may be a lot more. But making bubbly can be quite intense because of the pressures the bottles are on and all that stuff. Well, he also said that they mentioned Italy and Spain and Germany and the whole European continent of how climate change is affecting the grapes there and all. So I saw this article, will climate change help hybrid grapes in the U.S. wine industry? And I thought, well, yeah, possibly, but they're still not catching on yet. I mean, when you go out and you start looking for wine, you start looking for names you know. And you don't often think about grabbing something else that is not familiar to you. Well, the pressures of all the different things in grapevines, I mean, stink bugs, spotted lanternflies, insects that feed on the vines. It goes on and on. But this is because of the European grapes. They were brought over to the United States, and a lot of these bugs are American, if you were, North American continent problems, bugs, all this stuff, getting into these Vitis vinifera grapevines, and the native grapevines of the United States have never had these problems. So the hybrid grapes are a cross between the Native American grapes, indigenous, and the European varieties. So this is what they're looking at doing now. Now, in fact, the article even said that the indigenous grapes have always been referred to as foxy or musky or not what you want to try. you talk to some people, though, and they said, you know, we talked to a winery out of, Kentucky, I think, and he did Muscadine grapes, and he said, we should embrace these grapes. These are the best grapes in the world and all that stuff. So they're sold on it. But I've always thought they had this, and Foxy was, I thought, was one of the best description, best descriptive words you can use for the Muscadine or the hybrid grapes. And it's hard to explain what I mean by Foxy, but it's just like it was like a fox tails ran through your mouth to me. That's really what I always looked at as Foxy. And they weren't clean, and they weren't, and they were sweet. Well, the hybrid grapes are overcoming a lot of these problems that you associate with hybrid grapes, and especially with the American native grapes, because they've been working on it and all that. And so you're coming up with grapes that are much, I wouldn't say much better. Yes, much better. Much better than what they were. And because of that, they're looking at embracing that in the wine industry of the United States. And it's something they need to do. Now, there are some ignored grapes out there that they can use instead of just the hybrids, the what they call the heritage grapes. Heritage grapes are ones that are genetically different from the Vitis vinifera, I used to know all these, all the American grapes names. I can't think of it, but they don't really get the disease. These are the Burden, B-U-R-D-I-N, which is a heritage grapes, Empire State, which is the name of another one, and the Jefferson. Burden is a red grape. The Empire State is a green grape, a white grape, and the Jefferson is also a red grape. So, University of Minnesota Vitis riparia, which is often referred to as Minnesota's native grape. They've produced some hybrid wine grapes that can flourish in colder regions, which is good things here because they can put them up north. And they are coming up with great ones, as is Cornell University. They have constantly came out with some new grapes and new hybrids that will grow well. The small amount that's being made, though, now, is not even making a dent into it. According to, let's see, the amount, the total U.S. wine consumption, this is by Wine Spectator magazine, said that in 2019, consumption was around 328.9 or 329 million cases a year in the United States. So, a long ways to go for these hybrids. But the hybrids may be the grapes of the future because they are more acclimated to the climate, to the climate change and to all that. Wine grapes that we get from Europe really are quite fragile. They they can't stand the cold. They can't stand too much of the heat. They've got to have the right amount of water and stuff like that. Whereas the hybrid grapes are bred to, are mixed and to be able to withstand the cold and be more tolerant of the heat, be more tolerant of drought, and also be able to fight off downy mildew and all these other types of afflictions that will affect just the straight European grapes. So you may be seeing more on the shelves. And the thing is with it, it's not going to jump out and take over all the way. But give it a try, because it, you may find some of these that you really enjoy and that you find is worth picking up every once in a while. So those are hybrid grapes. And one other thing I want to mention here, too, is I said before something about the Michelin stars, Michelin star restaurants, a while back, and I wanted to check on that. Well, Tampa just recently got awarded 3 new Michelin-starred restaurants. And St. Petersburg didn't get any, but Tampa got 3 new ones on the list now. Michelin restaurants are based on the cuisine, the wine list, and just different criteria that, you know, is mind you, but they look at all this stuff. And I thought, well, you know, that's pretty cool that they got this. But as I was going through and reading the article even more, I found that there's a lot of the Michelin restaurants, Michelin certified restaurants, are dropping out of the program, are not wanting to renew their Michelin association. And it's because they said it's just too difficult to keep up with the rules that they have. And also they said it's the cost. And people come in thinking that because it's a Michelin, it's going to be a certain way, and they said that they don't like that. So a lot of them are dropping out. So I just found that interesting, that you can not renew your membership, I guess it's called, or not renew your whatever it's called, and being a Michelin restaurant. And just if you don't like it, just say no longer. Although, I don't know. I guess people aren't as impressed with it. Maybe it's just me, but a Michelin restaurant, I guess if you go into a restaurant and it's a Michelin restaurant, you're going to expect to pay a lot more money because it is a Michelin restaurant as opposed to one that isn't. And that might be one of the factors for these restaurants dropping out, too. So there's a bit of information for you tonight. I apologize for the sound and whatever on this. I'm going to have to get a hold of Blog Talk Radio and ask them, or Mike, you can send them an email, since it's, you know it, I don't. And so explain
all
that.
I was
going
to contact them anyway, not only just the problems that we've had here, but now they're going after your lights. I mean, that is just, they're taking,
yeah, I know. That's the final step there. That is really
your online, you know, your audio. They can mess with that because, you know, that's something you almost expect, not out of them, but obviously not so regular. But then when you said your light just burned out, I thought, okay, that's too far. And,
well, you know, and it's not just like it's a present light bulb, or, well, they don't have them anymore, but it's not just like that. This is a round light with a magnifier on it, so it's got to be a round. So it's a special light, and you know, it just burned out. You know, so I never had one of those burn out like that before on me. So,
sounds like a same type I have on my my hobby table that I have in here. It's where I can see things and it magnifies it and everything. It's like some of these parts you got to look at, you know, really carefully. It definitely helps.
I do stamps and coins, and that's what I use it for. And it definitely helps, you know. But my light burned out on it. It just it flickered a few times, and all of a sudden it just went out and made a buzzing noise, and I turned it off, and it's gone. You know, so I hope it's not the ballast, or not ballast, but the filament or whatever. Because I had to replace my last one because something went out on it, and I couldn't just put a new light bulb in it. It just didn't work. So I hope it's not the same thing with this. That could get expensive, having to buy new lights every time that they break. So,
Oh,
For sure.
Okay. Well, we will go ahead and close the show out for this evening on June the 16th. It is 1:05 a.m. in London, 8:05 p.m. here on the East Coast, Eastern Time, and we will be back next Thursday live, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, on Blog Talk Radio, Facebook, and YouTube on June the 23rd. So,
and hopefully,
mark calendars. Yeah, we won't have any issues.
Yeah, I hope we don't have any issues. Yeah, you're going to have to email them and tell them what's going on. I mean, every other week we can't do this. You know, that's
it's
a bit ridiculous.
So, all right.
Thank you for listening. Be safe out there. We'll see you next week.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Why.
We can hit a button here, can't you? Let's see. Outro exit, if that works. No, it doesn't. I can't control it. I'm a guest. It won't let me control the keyboard or the switchboard.
That's true. Yep.
Oh, there we go.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at...
Okay. Did you start that other one? I didn't touch it.
I started it, and then it turned off on me. It's still running, though. But it's
I turned it off.
Sound.
Okay. Yeah. I tried to play it on this end and hit the exit button or the stop button. Oh, we're still on. Let me unhook us from...
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
There we go.
Okay. Going to the green room.
Okay, I think I can go to the green room.